It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. Our last show of the week, and always Friday is a busy one. Our Friday panel going to join us very shortly, talking through some of the big stories of the day and the week. Of course, we very much want you involved in that conversation. The lines are open for you right now to be involved, 086 60 25,000. That's your WhatsApp and text number. You can also give us a call on 07491 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. The Donegal International Rally gets underway in earnest today. Oisin Kelly's going to be out and about with the team, of course. He'll join us a little later on in the show to look forward to today's action and indeed give us some updates on that action. That and so much more besides. And if you want to watch the show, of course, you can use your smart TV, your Fire Stick. Watch us on the YouTube app. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland, and we're on Facebook and on the X platform as well. So there you go. Right, let's say good morning first to Michael White, Chair of the Green Party in Donegal. Michael, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Or very well, Greg. Good morning.
Okay, I feel like I haven't chatted to you ages. Good to have you back on the show. Breed Corran, solicitor, thank you for joining us. Good morning to you.
Morning.
It's great to have you back.
Nice to be back with you.
Independent Senator Eileen Flynn's with us. Hi, Eileen. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Michael and Breach, and to the rest of your listeners as well.
Thanks so much for joining us. Okay, we learnt yesterday that Ireland is the second most expensive country in the European Union for typical goods and services. Prices here are 38% above the EU average. We're only behind Denmark when it comes to high prices. Michael, I'll start with you. The government has ruled out any further universal payments, but the cost of living crisis is not getting any better. We're also going to see petrol and diesel prices go up, not just for this weekend, but across the board, I imagine, as the year wears on. You know, we know we pay very high rates for electricity as well in this country, and it's gotten worse. We've always been there or thereabouts in terms of the most expensive countries to live in. And as I say, things have disimproved over the last wee while. Well, I mean, do you have any insight as to why that is, and what perhaps maybe should the government be doing to help those who are struggling?
Well, a few things. I think there's a general perception in the media recently that things are kind of back under control, that inflation has dropped. But food prices rose by about 25% from 2020 to the end of 2024. So there's a good chunk of the population that hasn't seen any benefits. So headline inflation rates have dropped. A lot of stuff rose in price, and their income didn't jump up correspondingly. So there's a portion of the population that's suffering. So I don't think the universal credits put out, I don't think they should be applied. It should be instead targeted. There's a number of other things to think about at the moment as well. Because of what's going on in Iran, there's a chance that oil prices could really increase significantly. You have a big shock like we had at the start of when Russia invaded Ukraine. And over and above that, you have the uncertainty around tariffs that could knock out maybe 15-20% of our corporate tax over the coming year. But that's kind of a worst case scenario, but there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen next. So that's not to say not to do anything, but we need to be super careful about what we do.
But of course, you talking about sort of the global impacts of the likes of the situation in Ukraine and now what's happening in the Middle East, we do though seem more exposed to that in terms of, price increases and then them staying stubbornly high compared to our European neighbours. We have comparable data and we seem to be far worse affected in this country, and it's not really talked about much, it doesn't seem to me anyway.
Yeah, it looks like we're being screwed over. It's the big UK retail chain is called Ireland's Treasure Islands, because they were able to increase prices here beyond what would be normal in a larger market. We're paying over the odds for a lot of things. There's a need to try and focus on that, to focus on our energy costs. But part of the problem as well is that we import, but nearly all of our energy is imported as fossil fuels, and we're very exposed to increases in the overall
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's, I get where you're coming from, but for again, it's outside of that. You know, the ESB has talked about the level of investment that's required into the network. They've made, you know, multiples of billions of dollars over the last year, but it's the consumer, even though the data centers will be using 25% of the power, again, it's the consumer that's going to be asked to put it their hands in their pockets to pay for the infrastructural development of the ESB for them to make even more money. Again, it just feels like, you know, this doesn't really seem to happen like this in other countries.
There's definitely a problem during the COVID pandemic and afterwards. Prices increased, and those prices weren't always, well, a lot of the times they weren't related to the costs that the suppliers had. There was just an opportunity to take greater profit. There's a need to address that. But the specific question in this case is, what can we do for, a good chunk of the population's not under as much pressure, but there's a part of the population that really is under pressure and hasn't really been addressed all through since COVID. They're still under pressure because of their food bills are a big portion of their budget. Those have gone up, fuel prices have gone up, and they're not being helped. So I think the question to start was previously that these sort of universal credits to help everybody. And I guess what I'd be saying is no, there shouldn't be a universal credit. It should be really, really focused on the people that need it most. And what you're referring to, though, there's needs to address the wider problem of why are we paying over the odds for so many things.
That I think is easy when you're talking about maybe those who are receiving support or social welfare payments from the government. You can sort of categorise those people, but then there is a large chunk of working poor that I wonder how targeted. Credits might work for them. I'll come back to you, of course, Breed Curran. You know, insurance, electricity, food, everything is disproportionately expensive here.
What we're talking about here, Greg, is really is price gouging, is people who are taking advantage of the fact that inflation has eroded the impact of any increases that have been made. And that is a huge problem. I often find that the Irish are very, very quiet. The French certainly are much more vocal when we're looking abroad. The French and the Spanish and the Italian are much more vocal. It really wasn't until the prices surrounding water prices that the Irish actually started realising that their voice had an impact, and that if they collectively en masse shouted hard enough, then someone in government would listen. The big issue in relation to all of this, of course, is that we're a small island, very, very small market on the periphery of Ireland, on the periphery of Europe. We're almost targeted in a way with regards to housing prices and energy prices. And I agree completely with with Michael that any increases that would be made would need to be targeted. It's a huge bugbear of mine that children's allowance in this country is not means tested. It has been for a long, long time something that I've been shouting about and talking about. The fact that two parents who are on comfortable salaries, very, very well off, maybe 120,000 coming into the house as a unit, are getting exactly the same as those who are on social welfare or those who are the working poor who are struggling to put food on the table, clothes on their children's backs. That has to be addressed by the government. I think there are some talks, and I'm hoping in the next budget that we'll have a two-tier system whereby any increases, particularly in children's allowance, or in carer's allowance, would be targeted towards those whose household income doesn't have the same pressure that those who are on social welfare or those who are the working poor. The working poor are now an increasing mass of voters in this country that the government need to talk to and to engage with, or else they're going to lose that at the next election.
But that being said, we are just out of an election and the government parties really did quite very well. That is an endorsement.
And we bucked the trend. Yeah. We bucked the trend in that regard, in that incumbent governments all over Europe were falling and there was a slide to the far right. And again, I think it's, you know, the Irish are actually very, very quiet. We're not vocal at all. We don't raise our voices. I don't think we actually value the collective voice that we can have. It was only, as I say, with the Irish water charges that they actually mobilised. And
that's
seem to have
a
kind
long
of gone
time
back into
ago.
Our boxes again.
Yeah, and that is a long time ago, Breed. We often reference
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's so blooming long ago.
No other cause has mobilised us as much as Irish water. And no cause since has mobilised us. And I would hope that maybe the cost of living, you know, that people will actually, you know, start talking about this now. I mean, inflation is going to erode any impact that any increases are going to make. Look, at cost of living is still a huge problem. I see that every day of the week in the work that I do. And increasing those universal payments is useful, but it's no use on its own. There has to be a targeted approach that we have to deal with housing, we have to deal with energy prices. And I appreciate that because we're on an island off the edge of Europe, our energy prices are going to be higher. But we need to look at this as a global problem and not simply a short-term relief.
Okay. Well, I mean, one of the things that we shouldn't forget either, that one of those universal credits was payments directly to electricity companies that are shafting the consumer.
Absolutely.
You know, it was literally paid straight into their bank accounts.
Absolutely.
So that's
and
a reward.
While it took the pressure off us, the consumer, it didn't do anything to compel those companies to reduce their prices. Another bugbear of mine is the insurance industry in general. The Irish government were told by the insurance industry, if you reduce the cost of claims for personal injuries, we will reduce our premiums. So what did the Irish government do? They rolled over, let the insurance industry tickle their belly and say, absolutely, what we're going to do is we're going to reduce the cost of awards. What did the insurance industry do? Absolutely nothing.
Well,
tell me one
going
person
up.
Who's had a decrease in their insurance premium since the Injuries Resolution Board or the new guidelines in relation to personal injury. I haven't met one who's
no.
in insurance
no, not
premium.
Off
the,
not,
has
off,
been
not off a basic renewal, no, not at all. Senator Eileen Flynn, you know, I mean, obviously through your offices as well, get a lot of representations in this regard. You know, we also have to factor in, we are charged with caring for our youth, and we've seen a dramatic increase in well in excess of 100,000 now of children that are living in prolonged poverty, literally food versus other items. Parents are having to make those shouts, right? So it's a sad situation, what's going on.
Yeah, there was a report launched, Greg, last week in Cherry Orchard in Ballyfermot. Now, Cherry Orchard has a very small population, and over 400 families has used the food bank. Now, I don't have all the figures in front of me right now, but I know for a fact every one in three children on this island is living in poverty, you know. And the housing crisis, the cost of living, etc. When we talk about the working poor, you know, you can either work then not have children because it's the price of a mortgage to have your child still in childcare. It's you know, I know some shops is there than other shops. You go to one local shop, you could be nearly €4 for your butter. You go to another local shop and it's say €3, you know. I think there should be proper caps and the food as well, like what's the price of butter in one shop should be the price all over, you know. And that's only one example. I know Breed spoke about the child benefit. I can't see that being a two-tier system because that's the rights of a child. Every child in this country is the right to the child benefit. And I don't know how I feel around mean testing that. You know,
it's not to contradict you, but they did introduce a system, if I'm not mistaken, whereby you had to sign a form to say that you wanted to continue to receive the children's allowance. So does that not sort of blur the issue that it's something every child's entitled to if you can forego it on behalf of your child? I don't know. Maybe there's scope there for making it more targeted.
What I'd say, Greg, is I think we need to be very, very careful as legislators and around being part of the two-tier system, especially when it comes to child benefit. You know, again, it's something that every child has a right to, and at a European level as well. I don't see it changing in the next budget, because from Europe, I don't think it'd be allowed, and rightly so, because for some parents, that's like for it's for their children at the end of the day. So I haven't really looked into it, but I do agree around the means testing for electricity, the means testing for like, it's not only electricity, it's food, it's gas, it's clothing grants for the winter, bed clothes, etc. Like, I do think things are getting worse for the ordinary working.
But Eileen, there's a lot of ye in between the Shannon and the Dole, and there's only so much anyone can do individually. So this is not an accusation or a criticism against you, because you use your time on certain issues, and that's welcome. But I mean, is it not really the role of all of the Dáil and with the support of the Shannon to sort of say, you know, enough is enough here. Let's take on the insurance companies. Let's take on the electricity companies. Let's find out why food prices are sky high. Like, we're hamstrung. We can't do anything about it. And yet we've got, you know, hundreds of politicians, and it doesn't seem to be on the top of their agenda across the board. I'm sure individuals have great interest in this. Like, it kind of is a bit of a failure of the whole system, isn't it? Where are the people advocating for us?
It's the same with the housing crisis, Greg. It's very unfortunate. I know for me, and I can only speak in behalf of the civil engagement group in the Shannon, who's made up of myself, Senator Lynn Yuan, Alice Mary Higgins, and Senator Francis Black. You know, we talk about giving the handouts, how the handouts only helps the family maybe for a week or 2 weeks. What do they do after that? Families need more sustainability. Again, one out of every third child in this country is going through poverty. Last week in Cherry Orchard, the amount of the survey that was done talks about young people's health. Our health system is absolutely shattered. I wouldn't even say it's cracked. It's shattered. It needs to be rebuilt. Our housing crisis, we need to start, you know, this government has an awful lot to deal with, but I don't think the political will is there to deal with it. They don't want to stop child poverty in this country. They don't want to stop homelessness in this country. And most importantly, they don't mind the big businesses and the multinational businesses getting richer in this country. Again, Greg, I don't believe in the handouts. I believe in the hand up and supporting a family all year round, instead of giving to electricity companies to be able to minimise the cost as much as possible for poor people. Mm-hmm. I will say the universal grant doesn't work for, like, around child benefit. I wouldn't look at a two-tier system. That's me personally. But on everything else, I'd be saying, you know, we have to give people at the edges of society, the working poor, people and social welfare, more support, really.
All right, I'll be back with more from Eileen, Michael and Breed and you after these. If you're out and about in the roads, I've been told there's been a three-car collision on the main road from Kilmacrenan to Letterkenny. People going to Kilmacrenan, I'm told, should avoid the area. We'll bring you any updates on that as soon as I get them. A caller says, remember that people earning a decent salary pay for everything for their children, including third-level education and health, and it's given to mothers. Hi, Greg. As long as they keep increasing wages, costs are going to keep increasing. It's a vicious circle. You don't need to be an economist to realise this. Well, it's chicken and egg. What's chasing what? The European Central Bank did 10 continuous increases on our mortgages, and no one was asking why. These increases lead to many families getting into difficulty and could have led on to losing the home. The reason they did it is that you had less money to suppress inflation. That's why they do it. It's so that you have less money, that you are struggling more, basically. But Breed, before we move on, just a brief comment on, you know, like, are we very separate in this country in terms of our status, financial status? You know, the well-off, the okay, the poor. You know, you talked about how something that united us and brought us out onto the streets was water, for an example. But if we're okay, do we just forget about the fact that there's over 100,000 kids that are in continuous poverty? Like, are the people who are you know, are the people who are in the most deprived areas less likely to vote for an example, or disenfranchised with a political system, or so, something is happening, right, whereby there's so many people in this country I feel aren't actually broadly represented in politics and in policy, if any of that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, and I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's almost like the smug content, and we're here in our nice house with our nice 2.3 children, and we're earning 120,000 a year, and we really don't, we're not affected at all by the fact that somebody who is living in the same town or the same parish or the same area may be really struggling. And what I was saying about targeting, and I appreciate the children's allowances for the child, but tell me what's fair in a child living in a house with an income of 120,000 a year, going on holidays three or four times a year. The parents don't even have to spend the children's allowance, because presumably what some of the more well-off do is they save the children's allowance so that there is a lump sum there when the child turns 18. Tell me what's fair with that, and then comparing a family that are really, really struggling to educate their kids, to do their best for their kids, and that their children's allowance is nearly almost spent before they receive it.
I was chatting to someone a year or so back, and this is no criticism of them whatsoever, but there was a form that you get that you sign each year to say that your status hasn't changed and stuff, and the children are still at school, and they forgot to send that back, and they hadn't received children's allowance for 9 months and didn't realise it, and they were cock-a-hoop that they figured it out and got 9 months backdated. Now, as I say, I'm not criticising them, but if you're not missing they didn't even know they hadn't received it.
I do a lot of family law for and when you're going through somebody's statement of means and you're looking at what's coming in and what's going out, it's frightening. You know, I mean, and sometimes they don't actually, people who would come to me for family law cases in relation to maintenance and access, the children's allowance is absolutely crucial and critical, and they wouldn't be able to survive without it. But then I'm looking at people who, you know, have massive incomes, going two and three holidays a year. Their child or children may be in private education. They don't even miss the children's allowance. They don't even, it doesn't even figure in their family budget. And to me, that there's just a basic unfairness in that. And that's why I would like to see the next government talk about a two-tier system with regards to children's allowance, so that those who don't need the children's allowance to make ends meet would get a reduced sum or wouldn't get it at all.
Yeah, okay. Eileen, do you want to...
those who really need it would get an increase in that.
Yeah, Eileen, sorry, you wanted to come back in there.
Maybe Breach has done a lot of research on this and how she would look at this as being fair. For me personally, as I said, I think we need to be really, really careful when we create two-tier systems when it comes to...
it's almost a constitutional, ethical thing you're coming at it from, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I get it, Bridge. Like, even the universal charge for childcare, for social welfare, like, you know, celebrities are entitled to a child benefit for, like, the child is born, you're entitled to your child benefit. I just think if we're going to have a two-tier system, is that really going to give to the poor? Mm. Because you're right, there's a big majority of people in this country that may not need the child benefit. But again, is it like the Medlar card? Is it like the two-tier system that we have in the hospital? Do you know what I mean? You go in, you're on a Medlar card, you're having a child, you get treated less than the woman who's paying privately. So we just need to be really, really careful about the two-tier system. Now, again, if it was done right, Greg, I can't actually say right now I'm in favour of it or I'm not.
And that's perfectly fine, but we can only speak from our...
My agenda in the last few weeks, and then I would actually say, what harm is it saving for your child to have a better future? We all want our kids to have a better life than what we had. So I'm just...
No, that's a perfectly good position to be in as well. But Michael, like, say, for instance, stuff that we could work on. You would have heard this week the rules covering uniform supplies and technologies put in place by many schools are needlessly increasing costs for parents. Again, this is going to affect those that the money is tightest with. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, they wrote to schools and sort of just asked them to maybe look at trying to reduce the costs? When we brought this up during the week, someone sent a basket from one school in the east of the county, and you're obliged to get this stuff for your kid, like zip-ups, 38 quid, leggings that are branded, 30 quid, you know, and that this is for one round of uniforms for one kid going back to school. I've been talking about this for so blooming long, it's so frustrating, Michael. This CCPC, they've just advised schools to use generic uniform items and ensure a competitive process underpins the appointment of any exclusive suppliers for school uniforms, tech devices and software. I covered that story in full knowledge that schools will continue to do what they're doing. Is it time for the government to intervene on matters like this? Because I know again, and sorry to waffle, I know again already families that have begun already putting stuff away at before the other school year ends because they know they can't face that bill with everything else coming to the beginning of the school year, Michael. That's a crazy situation, completely avoidable.
Yeah, there's a broader point here, and so I'm not going to skip the question about uniforms, but the broader point that's been made of Senator Eileen Flynn made, there's, according to the CSO, there's 500,000 people living in at risk of poverty, and there's like 100,000 kids. We're also one of the richest countries in the world. This is ridiculous. And so I was saying that, you know, I don't like a universal intervention should be targeted at people who need. I wasn't talking about means testing. I was saying that we can probably have a pretty good guess of who needs the help. They say that lone parents are the most likely to be at risk of poverty, lone parents with under the age of 25. We can have a pretty good guess who needs the help the most and then intervene. We were sitting on 14 billion quid we got from the Apple judgment in Europe, but we had food banks in this country. It's disgraceful. It's really wrong.
We have 15 billion by the end of this year that was never accounted for, an additional 15 billion, because I believe it was 4 or 5 billion initially that our income is greater than we thought it might be, and now there's an additional 7 or 8 billion that's due to come in, and yet we're still being told that we can't touch that because, you know, it might not be around forever.
Yeah, but the Apple 14 billion is definitely ours, and we can do whatever the hell we want with it. The point is, that's a massive amount of money, and that would, at the stroke of a pen, could solve child poverty in Ireland. But that's kind of the point. This country and the politicians need to say that that's what they want. Either Eileen or Breed made the point. Do they really want to fix this problem? So somebody needs to say, we would, and you could do it. You could eradicate childhood poverty in Ireland within one government term if they got their finger out and said that that's the biggest priority. One of the reasons why should it be a priority? It's not just because we're nice people and we think kids should be okay and looked after. In a country like Ireland, our biggest resource are the smart kids that we have. The reason the country's economy has grown so fast is because our children are really well educated now compared to 30 or 40 years ago. Every kid that's at risk of poverty in Ireland, that's impacting their life chances and their education, everything else. That's not just a loss to them, it's a loss to the country. So it benefits us all if we get this sorted out. But somebody has to say this is number one priority. It's related to the same issue with housing. They're going to screw around for another 5 years. There's going to be the rent pressure zone thing. There's going to be something.
Yeah, but every measure that's introduced seems to disadvantage those. So say, for instance, the rent pressure zones. That the idea of that is to reduce rent. It won't because, firstly, it sets them where they are at now. Rents will never go down because if you're introducing an RPZ to bring in more external investment because they're not making enough money, well, they just stop then. They've got you over a barrel. They just stop then. And turn the tap off when they believe they're not making enough money. How does that increase any supply or future prosperity for rent? We used to talk about home ownership. Now, home rentership is almost unattainable.
Well, the guy from the central bank said during this week that it may have some positive effect on supply a few years down the line, but it's definitely going to negatively affect tenants right now. So that's the central bank, the guy called Kelly said that. So again, yeah, the people who are going to get screwed over and get hurt by the RPZ extension will be people who are renting at the moment. Rents will definitely go up. They're talking about how it's beneficial for the tenants because it gives them greater security of tenure. That's not really going to be true. A bunch of things are going to happen in the next couple of weeks while landlords try and criticize landlords.
But say where you are. I want to come back to you on the RPZ, but I just want a quick word with Breed on the uniforms and stuff, as I say, because, you know, we can't get the big things right, some would argue. But we seemingly do nothing about the little things, but little things that are incredibly significant to lots of people, Breed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say in relation to this issue with regards to school uniforms, it's not a matter for government. And I was delighted to see that the CCPC came on board, because the CCPC do actually have teeth and they can control retail outlets that are engaging in anti-competitive behaviour. So rather than saying this is a matter for government, I think that we should be now putting pressure on the CCPC. And I heard their CEO during the week at one stage saying that if parents discovered that there was, you know, a particular school that required one item to come from a recommended retailer as distinct from a generic brand, that the parents should ring the CCPC because they're going to do something about it. So rather than blaming it all back on government and putting up, you know, the nanny state, I think we you know, as parents, we need to say, okay, lift the phone, ring the CCPC and say, my child is going to a school. I've been told that I have to buy my laptop and my branded sports gear or whatever from a particular retailer, and let them deal with it. That's the way to deal with that, because it is suppressing competition between retailers in telling, you know, I think 75% of schools are told that they have to buy at least one item from a recommended retailer. That's anti-competitive. So I think what we should do as consumers and as parents is that we should lift the phone, ring the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission and say, I've been told by the principal that I have to buy my child's laptop from X, Y or Z, or rather just maybe even just X, and let them deal with it, because they do have teeth and they can deal with that. That's what they're there for, rather than asking government to do it.
No, I agree. And I think I'm a big fan of us being very active ourselves. Before I bring Eileen in, Michael, just come back in on that, please.
The people under most financial pressure are the least likely to know the CCPC even exists. Well, so it's a lone parent in inner city Dublin who's struggling to get uniforms together for her kids next year. She's really unlikely to even know the CCPC. I'm not criticising Breed's suggestion. I think it's a good thing, but it's not the solution either. Somebody does need to intervene. It may not be government, but the people under most pressure in all of these circumstances are the people least able to advocate for themselves or to even know who to ring to get help. And so suggesting that they ring the CCPC, I don't think it might be part of the solution, but it's not the solution.
So you believe there should be...
I'm sorry, Greg. I really disagree. I think we're underestimating people in this country. I'm working with people day in, day out who are very vocal, who come to me for advice on one thing or another, and they're very, very clued in and very, very aware of how to get advice and where to get advice from. I think we're underestimating people, and I think I'm all for the power of giving people information, telling them what they need to do. And I think we're just we're relying too much on government, and we need to rely more on ourselves to.
Well, listen, I mean, it's very, very clear. We had the CCPC on the show this week, and following on from what Breed said, I never thought about it. I jumped. If your school is saying that you must buy your jumpers, your trousers, your tracksuit bottoms with embroidery from a certain place, that's anti-competitive. Get on to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, the CCPC. If you need a telephone number or an email address, contact us and say, look, this isn't fair. Eileen.
Yeah, Greg, I think every single family who has young children in school should be getting, obviously, the clothes grants for the children to go back to school. And I know that is meant tested, and it works for some families. I agree with both Breach and Michael to a sense. As parents, we do have a level of responsibility, because we put a lot of pressure on other parents as well, I believe, you know, as in this, like every year getting the new school bag, getting the top brands as well ourselves, and putting pressure on ourselves as our ordinary people, putting pressure on themselves, you know. Like, already I have a skirt from last year, from this school year, I got for Billy. She only wore a few times. It's getting washed and ironed, and she's going to wear it again next year. And the same with the school jumpers, and hopefully it'll go down to Lacey as well. And I think, like, if you can do that, that's absolutely brilliant. But for some people, they absolutely can't. Where children don't get, the uniforms get well worn, say, even after school, etc. But we don't even talk about the voluntary fund, Greg. Every school has the majority of schools has a voluntary fund, and parents are obliged to pay, say, in around 70 to 100 euro. And I think that's that's a lot of pressure on families as well. You know, and I do think while the government has a sense of responsibility here to make sure that no school is looking for that voluntary money, that the government are able to give it. Out of shame's sake, I give the voluntary money, but only for that, because I'm a public representative, I wouldn't give the voluntary money, because at the end of the day, that's still, there's nothing to do with the school, that's what the government should be doing.
It's a funding shortfall, yeah, indeed. And the government are doing some stuff as well, and I do wonder maybe if everyone who's entitled to support actually receives the support. For an example, and I thanks to Mabs Derry-Begg for pointing out that there is a working family payment for low-income working families. There is stuff there. Go to citizensinformation.ie just to make sure that you're availing of every support that you're entitled to. Eileen, did you want to finish a point there? My apologies.
Yes. My point is, Greg, say, you know, there's some schools in rural parts of Ireland, not just Donegal, that, you know, they have to pay for their own gas and electricity, and they're dependent on parents, right? Like, in one sense, it's rightly so, we have to help out communities, etc. But as Bridge said previous, there's people in communities like that's up here while their neighbour is down. Do you know what I mean? So that doesn't measure up. And again, I think the government should support the schools for the communities, instead of the communities keeping on the lights and keeping the gas on, paying for photocopying, etc. It shouldn't be such a thing, that voluntary payment.
Contribution,
like, you know, for richer people, say, having two or three children in the school, if they wanted to pay the €100 a year, well, then that's up to them, out of the goodness of their heart, to do that to the school. But again, there's a lot that's against the law, and people don't know it's against the law, and they shouldn't be under any obligation to pay.
Well, it's not a legal obligation, but as you said, you feel you do have to pay. Michael, did you want to come in there briefly just before the break?
Yeah, it was just something that the brief said about, you know, this isn't a matter for governments, that people shouldn't rely on them and should be more self-reliant. That's true to an extent, but the government can move things when they need to for certain audiences in this country. So, for example, just when we're looking at stuff to do with the housing crisis, the government spent $2.3 billion on HAP payments between 2019 and 2023. So they're handing out about £500 million every year to private landowners. The government can do that. Nobody's claiming that landowners are their, you know, handouts. But so the government can move pretty fast when it benefits people who cannot influence power, but they're not moving fast for people who are desperately in need in Ireland. So the reason we have food banks, which is a disgrace. I think you made the point, is there anybody that politically represents them? 60, 70 years ago, Fianna Fáil might have, Sinn Féin kind of, but there is a gap there now. Like, Social Democrats and Labour are primarily middle-class parties. So I think that there isn't good representation at the moment for people at the bottom end.
No, this is a difficult area to get in as to how to explain it without sounding like you're pigeonholing people. But I mean, the harder pressed you are in this country, the less fair it can seem, if I could put it like that. And there was some shifts in policy from Sinn Féin that sort of a lot of those people felt the backs were being turned on them, if I could put it like that, and it become even extra, felt extra disenfranchised. So the party they thought that was, you know, maybe, you know, trying for an equal society that supports everyone fairly, whether you're from here or you've come here. And I think a lot of people got peed off with that. We'll come back to that and more after these. I've been looking at the new laws on rent pressure zones every which way. They've been signed into law by the president, by the way, and it effectively means that the entire country now is a rent pressure zone. The legislation was fast-tracked by government in an effort to change up the rental sector across the country. It should be said this was done in a couple of days, and there's still people waiting for an extra 10% to rebuild the defective concrete block homes. But that's being held up because process, right? But when you need to do, my word, we can pull the finger out. Michael, we don't have a ton of time on this, but as I say, I've objectively looked at every angle on this, and I still can't find a scenario. It's like when you follow the lines, right, to try and get out the maze. I still can't find a scenario whereby rents come down in Donegal or even are sustained and more rental property becomes available.
No, I don't understand. I don't understand what the benefit of this is. In Donegal, I think there's 5,000 people on the housing waiting list. At the same time, house prices have increased by 10, or projected to increase by 10% this year. It seems pretty obvious that what is needed is to build more houses, and I don't see how this is going to help. And as I said, the guy from the central bank was saying that he thinks it'll help with supply, but not immediately. He thinks that immediately will have a bad effect on tenants. So people are under pressure already, are going to see their rents increase. So I don't see the logic in this at all.
Well, it effectively sets the rents going forward at the least 1,500 per month in Donegal, 2,200 in Dublin. I mean, that's what it effectively... There's no scenario in this that sees rents come down. This is where we're at going forward.
Yeah, and it doesn't address the problem, which is to build more houses.
Well, apparently the pension funds now see it more attractive, and they'll come in and build apartments. Your line's fading a little bit, so we'll go to Breed next. Breed.
Look, this government seems to be just tinkering around at the edges with housing policy and not actually targeting what they need to do. The world over, and I'm not an economist, but the world over and global experience will tell you that rent controls have one effect, and that's reducing the supply of rental housing. This government needs to build houses. It needs to build houses fast. It either does it two ways. It incentivizes private builders to build them, or it builds them itself. The big problem seems to be the lack of infrastructure. And we were talking earlier about the windfall from the Apple monies. Those monies need to be used not for day-to-day spending, but they need to be used to provide the infrastructure that this government and this country needs to build houses.
Why don't we just do that, though?
With regards to roads, schools, water supply.
So why don't we do that, Breed? Because that does fit into the you don't use excess money for day-to-day spending, you use it for infrastructure.
Yes.
So that makes sense. So the problem really is we don't have enough water, we don't have enough power, and we don't have enough skilled labour. So we can't build the houses. We can build them, but not at the scale that's required. So pump money into it, throw money into it, attract people to work here, and throw the kitchen sink at all of this. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. What we need to do is we need to fast track planning. The planning process in this country is an absolute nightmare and it's a disaster. We need to incentivize private builders to build. We need to incentivize local governments to start building houses. I found in my conveyancing practice that the Croí Cónaithe grants, the grants for doing up old houses, have been absolutely fantastic.
Massive,
the problem is inflation has reduced the value of that 50 or 70,000 euro. So if I were in government, I'd be increasing those grants and saying, right, I have a young couple at the minute who have just recently bought an old pub on the main street of a town. And you should see what they're doing with this house and with the assistance of the Croí Cónaithe grant. Absolutely fantastic.
Unfortunately, properties around here, that grant is not only with inflation and everything else, but unfortunately that grant is now being factored into the selling or the purchasing price of these properties.
Yeah, but I still find, that young couple bought an old pub for 70,000 euro.
Right, okay, fair dues, yeah.
Okay, they're getting 70,000 of a grant. Thankfully, both of them are in full-time employment, one a teacher, one a guard, and they're in a position to get a mortgage to do up an existing property. That's where we need to be focusing on. We need to be incentivizing people in that regard. We need to increase that grant because, unfortunately, that grant has been reduced with the cost of building. Yeah. The cost of building has skyrocketed in this country. We also need to have a look at that.
Yep.
But that's what this government needs.
They might even get
tinkering around the edges is just not going to work.
They might even get another 10 grand for off SEIA as well. Eileen, just a minute and a half or 2 minutes to you, if that's okay.
Greg, nearly the majority of our politicians in Donegal are all on the fishery committee, which I think is really important. But we need politicians in this county that really understand infrastructure, what we need for our roads, what we need for our planning laws as well. Because it's one thing having supply and having the money, then the planning laws are not there to build enough houses. And I know that for a fact. We need to look at our planning laws. We had the biggest piece of legislation through the Shannon and through the Dáil last year around local planning development bill. And again, we should be planning for this. Donegal has a housing crisis a health crisis, a mental health crisis, no different than Dublin. We don't see it physically on the streets. Also a drug crisis too. And the politicians in this county, I think, should move a little bit away from the fishing, leave two or three deal with the fishing. The rest of them need to talk up about ordinary people on the ground in this county who is living in poverty, who choose between eating or heating. It's all right now in the summer, you know. But again, Greg, I just think like it's a big focus in this county is about fishing, not around infrastructure. I'm on the infrastructure committee myself, and I will say it's absolutely mind-blowing how Donegal is the county that, I wouldn't say it's forgotten, but it's the county that's left behind.
Well, and like, you couldn't really, in all honesty, approve any planning application in Milford because they're out of water. They're out of water there. Buncrana is on the brink. Letterkenny's on the brink. Twin Towns is on the brink of literally being able to get water into properties and get poo out of them. But I must go, Eileen.
We're hearing of more people with houses affected, the concrete affected by the concrete crisis. And again, these are ordinary people who built these houses from scratch that will have little or no support. I heard politicians in the Shannon talking about the redress scheme, and numerous of times I wanted to stand up and say, well, actually, it was your party that voted for the way it is today.
I understand,
You know, and I really think, like, without me sounding any way non-realistic, you know, the politicians in this county need to work together more collectively, I think, for better roads, for better infrastructure, and for better outcomes for our young people and when it comes to poverty.
Lovely stuff. Senator Eileen Flynn, thank you very much. Powerful words. Have a lovely weekend. Best wishes to the family. Breed, same to you. Thank you so much for your wise words, as always.
You're very welcome.
Great having you on the show. Take care. And Michael White, great to have you back. Look after yourself. Have a fantastic weekend and best wishes to all.